Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 86.
Wukong's leading the horse, got the luggage, and he's calling out for the master. No answer.
Then Pigsy comes running up, all out of breath.
And of course, it's typical Pigsy. He immediately tried to pass the buck.
Right.
Says Wu-Tang San Zhang, and it was Wukong and Sandy's job to keep an eye on him.
He even makes that crack about Sandy taking the master off to relieve himself.
Right.
It's just chaos at first, isn't it? But then Sandy shows up, and Wukong, he puts it together fast. You can almost hear his voice crack when he yells, "We fell for his trick! We fell for his trick!"
And Sandy's like, "What trick?"
Yeah, totally confused. So Wukong explains it, the flower petal diversion scheme, how this demon picked them off one by one, deliberately, to grab the master. Wukong is, I mean, he's devastated. He actually starts crying.
Which is rare for Wukong. Really rare.
Very rare, powerful moment.
But Pigsy, you know, for all his usual complaining, he actually snaps Wukong out of it. Tells him not to be a crybaby.
Only Pigsy.
Right. He figures the master can't have gone far, must still be on this mountain. And they just need to find him. So off they go.
They walk, what, about 20 li?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then they spot it under a cliff. A cave dwelling, hidden away by rocks and plants. It looks almost nice.
It does. Picturesque, maybe like where an immortal would live. But you also get the feeling, yeah, this is definitely the home of an old man-eating monster.
That contrast is stark. Ancient trees, dancing cranes, but hiding pure evil.
And Wukong, he's always sharp. Spots the door, stone door, shut tight, with these eight big characters carved on it.
Hidden Fog Mountain, breaking peaks, linked caves.
Yep.
Wukong knows immediately. This has to be it. This is where the master is.
And Pigsy? Well, he doesn't wait for an invitation. He just charges forward.
Takes his rake and just smashes a huge hole in the door.
Yeah. Shouting for the demon to give back their master or else. The little demons inside totally freak out, run to tell their king.
And the old demon king is understandably alarmed. Like, who found us? How?
But his vanguard, his scout demon, is pretty quick on the uptake. Yeah, one little demon peeks through the hole Pigsy made, sees the long snout, big ears, and reports back. He says, don't worry, king, it's just Pigsy. He's not much.
Ouch. Burn.
But then he adds, the one we need to worry about is that hairy-faced, thunder-mouthed monk.
Wukong. That's crucial, isn't it? It shows they know exactly who they're up against. They fear Wukong. These aren't just dumb monsters.
Not at all. They understand the threat levels.
Pigsy overhears this, naturally. Can't resist poking Wukong. See? He's not scared of me. Just you. Master must be inside.
Wukong gets furious, of course. Starts yelling at the demon to surrender the master.
And when the vanguard reports that, yes, Sun Wukong is here, the old demon king actually blames his own plan. His flower petal diversion scheme for bringing Wukong down on them.
Which is interesting. You don't often see demons in the story showing that kind of strategic thinking or even regret.
Right. It adds a layer.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, how do they deal with Wukong now?
The vanguard thinks fast again. Remembers Wukong has a weakness. Despite all his power, he likes flattery.
Ah, yes. The vanity.
Exactly. So the plan is, get a fake human head. Tell Wukong they've already eaten Tang San Zhang and hope he just gives up and leaves.
Desperate times, desperate measures.
If that doesn't work, well, they'll figure it out then. The old demon asks, okay, where do we get a fake head? And the vanguard says, I'll make one.
It's quite the creation. This demon carves a head shape out of a willow root.
Splashes some human blood on it for effect.
Grim.
Brim.
Very grim. Sends a little monster out, carrying it on a tray, calling out, Grand Sage Grandpa, please calm down and listen.
And Wukong. Well, it works. The Grand Sage Grandpa title gets him. He actually stops Pigsy from just charging in again.
He's susceptible. The little demon spins this story. King caught Tang San Zhang. The little demon's got mischievous, ate him all up, only the head is left.
Wukong, though, he's still sharp. Demands to see the head, check if it's real.
The little demon throws it out. And Pigsy, when he sees it, he just loses it. Starts bawling immediately. Oh, how tragic. Master went in one way, came out like this.
Pigsy buys it completely at first. He even questions the idea it could be fake.
But Wukong, he's already suspicious. So what's the dead giveaway for him? What does he notice?
This is where Wukong's, like, street smarts really come through. It's not just magic power. It's practical observation. He knows a real head. When you throw it, it doesn't really make a sound on the ground. Thud, maybe.
Right.
But a carved root, even with blood on it, it's still wood. He picks it up, throws it against a rock, and...
A definite sound.
A loud wooden clang. Even Sandy pipes up, Brother, it made a sound. It just shows, you know, real wisdom isn't just about strength. It's about paying attention to the details. Empirical evidence.
Brilliant deduction. Just cuts right through the whole charade. He yells, "It's fake!" and smashes it with his staff.
Oof. Willowroot revealed.
Pigsy is furious now. Curses them out. Trying to trick us with a tree root. Think Master turned into a willow spirit.
The little demon scrambles back, terrified, reports, "Wukong is a connoisseur of antiques." He recognized the fate.
I love that line. Connoisseur of antiques.
So the old demon king is really stuck now. Asks, okay, how do we get a real human head?
And this is where it gets really dark.
It does. The demon reveals they have a place called the
The Skinning Pavilion.
And inside, more human heads than they can eat. Just stacks of them.
A skinning pavilion with extra heads. That detail just lands like a ton of bricks, doesn't it? It screams pure evil.
Absolutely. The tuna isn't just for shock. In, you know, Chinese demon stories, it's a classic symbol. It means the demon is utterly depraved, completely off the Buddhist path. No return.
So they just pick one.
Pick a fresh one, skin it, make it look right. They bring this one out, glistening, bloody, on a platter, insist this is Master Tang's head, kept as a house guarding treasure.
Rim trophy.
And when this head gets thrown out, rolling, dripping blood, Wukong recognizes it. There's no clang this time. It's real.
Oh, man.
And he just breaks down, weeping. Pigsy and Sandy, too, they all just start crying their eyes out.
It's utterly heartbreaking. But even then, Pigsy, he thinks practically through his tears.
Yeah, he says they should bury it quickly before the weather gets to it.
He actually picks up the head, doesn't even flinch at how gruesome it is, climbs the mountain, finds a sunny spot, digs a pit with his rake.
Buries the head, makes a little tomb mound. Then goes off to find some offerings.
And this next part is, well, it's really something. It shows this surprising depth from Pigsy. This kana, this filial piety.
It really does. He comes back with some big willow branches and some pebbles.
Willow branches and pebbles?
Yeah. He plants the willow branches around the grave, says they're like cypress and pine trees to shade the master's tomb.
Okay.
And the pebbles, he calls them snacks for the master. Wukong kind of scoffs, like, he's dead. What's he going to do, the pebbles?
Yeah, it's weird.
But Pigsy insists. He says it's to show a living person's intent to act as a filial heart. It's his way of showing loyalty, devotion. It's unconventional for sure, but genuinely poignant.
Wow. Despite everything we know about Pigsy, that hits deep. It's a really moving, if strange, display.
Definitely. But even with all that grief and this makeshift funeral, the resolve kicks back in fast.
Wukong tells Pigsy, okay, stop messing around. Tell Sandy you stay here by the grave, mourn, guard this stuff.
Then turns to Pigsy, total determination. You and I, he says, we're going to break into that cave, capture the demon, tear him to pieces, and avenge our master.
No hesitation. Sandy, still crying, just says, yes, go.
Zubarji, interestingly, he seems to be leading the charge here.
Yeah, he's fired up, wants revenge immediately. The demons claim they ate Tang Sanzang, which is, you know, the worst possible news.
Right. So Baji just sheds his robe, ready to go. He and Wukong, they smash through a stone door.
And they're shouting, return our living Tang Sanzang. Direct. Forceful.
No preamble at all.
And what's really telling is how the smaller demons react.
Oh, yeah.
They're terrified. Yeah. Absolutely terrified. And you can almost hear them whispering, blaming their vanguard, like, this is your fault.
Okay. Some internal politics, even among demons.
Exactly. And the South Mountain King himself, the main guy, he seems, well, a bit reluctant at first.
Really? Even though he's the leader?
Yeah, but the vanguard pushes him, uses that old saying, hand in fish basket, can't avoid the smell.
Meaning what exactly? Like, they're already dirty, might as well go all in?
Precisely. We're too deep now. So the old demon king rallies his forces, his elite weaponry he's committed.
Okay, so they gear up and head outside. And Wukong immediately calls them out.
Yep, straight away. Who's the famous leader here? Who's the demon that took my master?
And that's when the South Mountain King steps up. Iron pestle in hand.
Big entrance. Proclaims himself the South Mountain King. Says he's been dissolute for hundreds of years.
Dissolute, okay. And then the big line.
Your Tang Sanzang is already eaten by me. Just like that. Total provocation.
Wow. Okay, I bet Wukong loved that.
He explodes, calls the demon a bold furball, questions how old he even is to claim such a title.
A furball. Classic Wukong.
But then he gets really serious. He draws these really powerful comparisons. He brings up Laozi,
the founder of Taoism.
Right. And Buddha, Rulai.
The Western Heaven.
And Confucius. Immense figures. And Wukong points out that they all humbly call themselves master or venerable.
So he's contrasting the demon's arrogance with true earned authority and humility.
Exactly. It's a brilliant move. He's establishing a kind of moral and cosmic hierarchy, basically saying, who do you think you are compared to these giants? It really undermines the demon's self-importance.
It raises that question, doesn't it, about power versus just, you know, loud boasting.
Definitely.
Then Wukong launches into his own introduction, but in verse, which is just fantastic.
It's epic. He lays out his whole origin story.
Right. The celestial stone egg on Flower Fruit Mountain, his body nurtured by the sun and moon, his innate gifts.
And his old title, Great Sage Equaling Heaven, Da Sheng.
The one who fought the Big Dipper, took on 10,000 heavenly soldiers, could gather all the stars. I mean, the power level is just off the charts.
He's reminding everyone exactly who they're dealing with.
But then he pivots, right? He talks about his current mission.
Yeah, he says, now fortunately, I have converted to Buddhism, supporting the elder on the journey to the West, and claims basically that because of him, no demon dares to appear.
Which is clearly not true right at this moment.
Well, yes, but it's part of the intimidation, isn't it? It's a statement of his usual power and purpose. It's absolutely a strategic display. It's psychological warfare. He's trying to win this before the weapons clash too hard, asserting dominance through reputation.
But the South Mountain King, despite hearing all this, he attacks anyway with his iron pestle.
He does. Maybe he feels he has to after Wukong's challenge. Wukong parries easily, of course.
And Baji. He can't resist jumping in.
Nope. Impatient as ever, he goes right for the vanguard. And then it just erupts.
A mixed battle, the text calls it, on the flat ground there. Dust flying, obscuring the sky. Sounds chaotic.
Utter chaos. You get these great parallel descriptions. Small demons howling, spears and knives waving, divine monks shouting, rake and cudgel rising. Our heroes giving as good as they get.
And it mentions their different fighting styles, too.
Right. Great sage is heroic, unequaled. You picture that skill, that speed.
And Baji, winning.
He's strong and joyful. Brute force, maybe a bit less refined, but powerful and, well, enjoying the fight.
Yeah, joyful. Okay, so the battle's raging, but the smaller demons are putting up more of a fight than expected.
Yeah, showing some surprising courage, actually.
So Wukong decides to up the ante. He uses the split body method, Shenfa.
Ah, the hairs.
Yes.
Can you describe that? It sounds incredible.
It really is. He just plucks a handful of hairs from his body, chews them up, spits them out, and shouts change.
And they become dozens, maybe hundreds, of little Wukongs. Exact copies, each one holding a tiny golden cudgel.
Wow. Okay, tactically, what does that do to the fight?
It's devastating.
Yeah.
Instantly shifts the balance. Imagine being a demon soldier suddenly facing not one, but scores of monkey kings attacking from everywhere.
Total confusion.
Complete chaos. The text says they couldn't attend to front or back, cover left or right. They just break.
They retreat back to the cave.
Yep, a panic retreat. And Wukong and Baji are right there, cutting them down as they flee.
And the description gets pretty brutal here.
It does. Baji's rake causing 9 holes bleeding. Wukong's cudgel turning bones and flesh like mud. It's a total rout, all thanks to that brilliant, almost overwhelming hair technique.
Shows his power, but also that strategic mind, adapting when things got tough.
Absolutely. Force multiplier.
So the main boss, the South Mountain King, he sees this happening.
And he makes a run for it, creates some wind and mist as a distraction, and just flees for his life.
Smart move, probably. But the vanguard isn't so lucky.
No. Wukong catches him. One strike from the cudgel, and down he goes. And then we see his true form.
Which is?
An iron-backed gray wolf monster, Tai Bei Kang Lang Guai.
A wolf. Okay. Yeah. And Baji, of course, has something to say about this.
Naturally. Sees the wolf and immediately quips, this fellow, since he was small, who knows how many pig's teeth and lamb's offspring he stole and ate.
Classic Baji. Finding humor even then. Pig's teeth.
Always lightening the mood, intentionally or not.
Meanwhile, Wukong is all business. He gathers his hairs back up instantly.
Right, the little Wukongs just vanish.
Baji's apparently amazed by this, asking where they went.
And Wukong's just like, I've already collected them. Simple as that. Then it's straight back to the mission.
Don't be slow, he tells Baji. Quickly chase the old monster to demand Master's life back. Urgency, focus.
Exactly. The immediate threat is handled. Now, back to the primary objective.
Right after the demon's been defeated, well, sort of defeated by Wukong and Baji.
Right, he managed to escape, and now he's barricaded himself inside his cave, which straight away sets up this huge challenge for them.
Okay, so the demon seals the front gate. Rocks, soil, everything. His little demons inside are apparently trembling. It's a total physical block.
It is. And it's not just physical, is it? It's a huge psychological barrier, too. Wukong and Baji, they go up, they demand answers. Nothing. Silence.
And Baji tries his rake.
Yeah, he tries the rake, but it doesn't even make a dent. It's a serious blockade, you know, designed to just completely shut them down and shut them out.
Okay, and this is where things take a real turn emotionally. Wukong and Baji head back, and they find Sha Wujing.
And he's just weeping. Weeping over this fresh grave they assume is their master's.
Oh, wow. You can just feel that heartbreak, can't you? Baji sees this, throws down his rake, and just starts crying, too. He's completely convinced Tang Sanzang is dead.
It's pure despair. But this is where Wukong, well, his reaction is completely different. His critical thinking kicks in immediately.
While the others are falling apart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He doesn't join the weeping. Mm-hmm. He looks at the situation and thinks, logically, okay, front door's blocked solid. There has to be a back way. It's that crucial shift, isn't it? From pure emotion to problem solving.
That really is a lesson right there. When everyone else sees a dead end, he's already searching for another path. So how does he find it? What leads him there?
Well, he goes off on his own, leaves the others to their grieving for a moment. He rounds a mountain slope, hears water.
Okay.
Finds a gully, water flowing down. And right next to it, there's this hidden door. And interestingly, red water is flowing out of a dark ditch beside it.
Red water.
Red water. And for Wukong, that's it. It's the clue. Bingo. He knows instantly this has got to be the back entrance.
So he's found the way in, but now he needs to actually get through it, through this water ditch. How does he approach that? What about his transformations?
Ah, yes, the transformations. It's quite telling. He thinks about becoming a water snake first. Seems logical, right? Water ditch, water snake. But then he stops himself. He remembers Tang Senzang. His master's very strict morals. A monk shouldn't be entangling things like a snake. So maybe not.
Huh. So he's considering his master's feelings even now.
Even now. Then he thinks maybe a small crab. But then he worries maybe the master wouldn't like all those legs. It shows this incredible consideration, doesn't it? It's not just about what works, but what aligns with his master's values.
That's quite something. So what does he pick in the end?
He settles on a water rat. Small, inconspicuous, can squeeze through the ditch easily enough.
Okay, so he gets inside as the water rat. And what's the first thing he sees? What changes everything?
He spots a small demon. And this is grim, drying what the text calls human meat strips in the sun.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And Wukong's immediate thought is just horror. My child, that must be master's flesh, save for a rainy day. It's meant to just completely crush him.
That must have been devastating, seeing that. But he doesn't. He doesn't just fly off the handle.
No. And this is where you see his real strategic depth. He feels that horror, that rage, but he doesn't act on it. He doesn't act on that first awful assumption.
He holds back.
He holds back because he knows rushing in would be, as the text says, courageous, but without wisdom. He needs more information. He can't be sure.
So another transformation.
Exactly. He refines his approach again. He becomes a winged ant.
A winged ant. Why that?
Well, the text gives us a clue. It's not just any ant. It's described as tiny, yes, but having achieved flight through long cultivation. It means it's incredibly subtle, almost magical in its stealth, cleverly and lightly, effortlessly passing through. It's the perfect disguise for deep reconnaissance, undetectable.
Okay, so now he's this tiny, super stealthy winged ant. He flies into the main hall. What does he hear? What's the big reveal?
He hears the old demon worrying, and then a small demon bursts in, all excited, with great news.
Great news for the demon, I get.
Right. The little demon says they saw Wukong, Baji, and Sha Wujing crying their eyes out at that grave, the one with the fake head. They totally bought it. They think Tang Sanzang is dead and buried.
Uh-huh. So that's the moment for Wukong.
That's the moment. The light bulb goes on. Master's alive. It was all a trick, a psychological ploy by the demon.
Wow. That's clever from the demon, but Wukong saw through it, or rather, found the truth.
He did. He has a quiet little celebration to himself, you know, internally, and resolves right then. Find the master first, then deal with the demon.
Smart. So where does he find him?
He flies through a side door into this large garden, hears weeping again, flies deeper, and there he is, Tang Sanzang, tied to a big tree. And someone else is tied up nearby, too.
He must have been so relieved. Does he reveal himself?
He does, but only briefly. Tang Sanzang sees him, starts begging for help, but Wukong immediately shushes him. Doesn't want to alert anyone. He whispers a promise. I'll deal with the demon, then I'll save you.
Again, prioritizing the threat removal before the rescue?
Absolutely. Strategy first. So he changes back into the ant, hides up on a beam, and listens again. And what he overhears next is, well, it's pretty chilling.
Oh, this is the part about eating him.
Yes. The small demons, they're convinced the monks are gone for good, or will be soon. So they start chatting about how best to prepare Tang Sanzang. Mm. One wants to cook him with spices, says it brings longevity. Another says steaming is better. Someone else suggests boiling, say firewood. And then another just wants to salt him down, preserve him.
That's just grotesque. But I guess it confirms everything for Wukong.
Confirms everything and understandably makes him absolutely furious.
So now he acts.
Oh, yes. He plucks out a handful of his magic hairs, chews them up, blows them out, and they become sleeping bugs.
Sleeping bugs. Like magical tranquilizers.
Pretty much. They fly right into the noses of the small demons and poof, they all just fall asleep. It's brilliant, really. Neutralizes them all without a big fight.
Very efficient. What about the old demon, though?
Good question. The old demon's a bit tougher. He's restless, rubbing his head, sneezing. The first bug didn't quite knock him out.
So Wukong needs plan B.
More like plan A, part two. He uses another hair, another sleeping bug, a sort of double lamp strategy, as the text implies, just to make absolutely sure the main threat is down. He's not taking any chances.
Got it. So everyone's asleep, demons neutralized.
Everyone's snoozing.
Yep.
So Wukong changes back to his true form, whips his staff out from behind his ear, makes it about the size of a duck egg, just big enough, and smashes down the side door.
Finally, he rushes to the garden.
Calls out to Tang Sanzang. And the master immediately says, untie me, untie me.
But Wukong, he hesitates. Is that right?
He does. It's such a fascinating moment. He's so overjoyed, so relieved, and maybe also think about the sleeping demon.
He actually runs back and forth a couple of times.
Back and forth? Debating what to do. Yeah, like, should I finish the demon off first?
Yep.
Or untie the master right now?
Yeah.
It's described almost like this little dance of pure glee and maybe slight indecision. It's incredibly human. Or, well, monkey-like, born from that overwhelming relief mixed with strategic opportunity.
That's an amazing detail. So he gets over his momentary daze.
He does. He unties Tang Sanzang, but just as he does, they hear this other voice. Someone else tied to a tree nearby, also asking for help.
Ah, the other person he saw earlier. Who is it?
Tang Sanzang explains, it's a woodcutter, captured just the day before. And significantly, he mentions the woodcutter is a filial son, very devoted to his parents.
And Tang Sanzang asks Wukong to...
to untie him, too.
Yeah.
Which Wukong does at his master's request. It just instantly shows you Tang Sanzang's compassion, doesn't it? Even in his own moment of rescue, he thinks of others.
Definitely. Okay, so they're free. They escape through the back way, over the cliff, across the stream. And Tang Sanzang's first thought is...
his disciples. Where are Baji and Xiao Wujing? And Wukong has to tell him, they're still back there crying over your fake grave.
Oh, this is gonna be good.
It really is. So Tang Sanzang calls out to them.
And Baji.
Baji hears the voice, but he's so deep in his sobbing, so convinced his master is dead, he thinks it's a ghost.
No, seriously.
Seriously. He thinks it's the spirit of Tang Sanzang calling to him. He just can't process the reality of it. The grief is that strong.
That's actually hilarious. Wukong must have loved that.
You can imagine. Wukong has to basically yell at him, oof! What ghost? Master's right here.
Finally snaps him out of it.
Finally. Xiao Wujing sees Tang Sanzang, falls to his knees, just overcome with relief. And Wukong quickly fills them in on the whole adventure. The back door, the ant, the sleeping bugs.
How does Baji react when he hears he was tricked like that?
He is furious. Absolutely enraged that this fake grave made him cry so much. He grabs his rake.
Oh, dear.
And just completely demolishes the fake grave, digs up the fake head, smashes it into bits. Just pure anger at being manipulated.
Understandable, I suppose. But then Tang Sanzang steps in.
Yes. And this is such a profound moment. He asks Baji, gently, why he destroyed it. He actually reasons that maybe if the demon hadn't done that, he might have just killed them all instead. It shows his perspective as a true monk, finding potential reason, even compassion, behind the enemy's actions.
Wow. And he asks Baji too.
He asks him to rebury the remains, the fake head, the rotting flesh and bones, as the text calls it, to rebuild the grave.
Even though it was a trick?
Even though it was a trick, it reflects that deep respect for life, or even the semblance of life, and maybe a respect for the cycle of things. It's about maintaining that core compassion, even towards a deception. And it really highlights the ethical core of Tang Sanzang. Contrasting maybe with Wukong's more pragmatic or Baji's more emotional responses, Baji, despite his earlier rage, he does it. He buries the bits and rebuilds the grave.
Wukong, of course, he's managed to subdue the creature quite skillfully, but it's what he does next that's interesting.
Yeah, Wukong's approach here is it's really fascinating. He doesn't just beat the main monster and call it a day. No, he's thinking bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
He binds the old monster, who's still out cold, by the way.
Yeah.
And then instead of this big messy fight with all the little goblins, he decides, right, I'm going to cut off the root. He wants a total solution.
Cutting off the root, which means burning the whole cave down with all the other demons still inside.
Exactly. Total annihilation.
Wow. And what really struck me, actually, was how specific the text gets about the fuel for the fire. It says the woodcutter, the guy they just rescued, helps Zhu Baji, that's pigsy gather, like broken bamboo, pine leaves, wormwood, mulberry. It's such a detailed list, isn't it? Why so specific, do you think?
Well, I think that specificity, it really underscores the thoroughness needed. It's not just any fire. It's like, this is what's available. This is what we have to use to completely eradicate this threat.
Mm-hmm.
Resourcefulness, maybe. And, you know, the detail about Wukong collecting his sleep-inducing hair before the fire really gets going.
Right. The trick he used on the main monster.
Exactly. He makes sure the little demons don't wake up in the smoke. It just shows how cunning he is.
Yeah.
There's really no escape once he sets a trap.
So the cave burns. The old monster eventually wakes up. And Baji just finishes him off with his rake. Simple as that. And then we find out what it actually was. A mugwort leaf patterned leopard demon. And Wukong has this chilling line about it, how its flowery skin can eat tigers. And now it can even look human.
Yeah, that detail's important. It's not just some random beast.
It really drives home the danger, doesn't it? And why Wukong felt, you know, preventing future trouble meant killing it completely.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you connect that to the whole journey, it's a stark reminder, isn't it? Progress isn't just about overcoming the immediate obstacle.
Yeah.
Sometimes, well, you have to completely remove the source of the problem to move forward safely. Lingering threats, they invite chaos back in.
Makes sense. So with the danger dealt with, the woodcutter they saved, he invites the whole group back to his place. A gesture of thanks.
And this leads into just a beautifully described scene. Really paints a picture of rural life, but also like genuine heartfelt hospitality. The description of the home. Mossy stone path, gate with vine flowers, mountains all around, birdsong, bamboo, pine.
Sounds idyllic almost.
It does. Very remote, deep in the clouds, you know. Simple thatched cottage, bamboo fence. Very humble.
And the reunion inside. The woodcutter's mother, she's there crying because she thought a mountain lord, you know, the demon, had taken her son. He explains how these are hots from the Eastern Tang Dynasty, basically, enlightened monks heading west for scriptures. That's our guys saved him.
Right.
And tells her how Wukong and the others beat the leopard demon. And she just comes out, bowing low, so grateful.
It's powerful. But it does make you think, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This exchange of kindness. They save his life. He offers them. Well, what little he has. Is it just like a transaction or something more?
That's a good question, because Baji even points out how humble the place is, tells the woodcutter not to, you know, go overboard for them. And the woodcutter admits, yeah, I don't have fancy mushrooms or spices, just wild vegetables. But then, this is where it gets really fascinating, I think, the description of the meal they do serve.
Ah, yes.
It's incredible. An absolute catalog of specific foraged wild greens. Things like blanched daylily, sour dandelion, purslane.
Mm.
But also these amazing names like dog's foot tracks, cat's ears, monkey's foot tracks, different kinds of wormwood, pondweed, even something called popo na.
It's an astonishing list.
Right. All served with just a pot of rice. It's so specific.
And what that shows, I think, is the sheer depth of their gratitude and, well, their resourcefulness.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just a meal. It's everything they could offer, gathered from the land around them. It's profound hospitality, not defined by wealth, but by sincerity. You really feel the heart of the people they meet.
That's a great way to put it. So after the meal, the pilgrims get ready to leave. More thanks exchanged. The woodcutter even walks with them for a bit. Just a small sign of that huge appreciation.
And it's as they're traveling on from there, we get this really rare moment, a look inside Tang Sanzang's head. He's on his horse, just thinking about how long this journey has been since he left the capital.
Yeah, reflecting on all the endless disasters, the mountains, the rivers, the demons, and how fate is inescapable. It sounds pretty heavy.
It is. He restates his goal, you know, only for the three baskets of scriptures, the Tripitaka, this sacred collection he needs to get, and his big aspiration to ascend to the nine heavens. Lofty stuff.
But then, right after that high-minded goal, comes the exhaustion. He's basically asking, when is this ever going to end? When can I just go home?
Mm.
It's quite human, isn't it? To hear that kind of raw weariness from this legendary holy man.
Absolutely.
Mm.
And that, for me, is the real so what. here for us, for you listening. It shows that even on the most divine quest, driven by the highest purpose, there's still this deeply human core, the longing for rest, for home, the sheer weight of the journey physically, mentally. Mm. It's real. It makes him so much more relatable than just, you know, a figurehead.
And then just as he's having this moment, the woodcutter, who's still with them, overhears him. And this ordinary guy offers this simple comfort. Hey, westward, less than 500 kilometers? The land of ultimate bliss. You're close.
Yeah, just this unexpected bit of reassurance from someone completely outside the quest.
Fang Senzang actually gets off his horse, thanks the woodcutter again, promises to pray for him and his mother. Mm-hmm. And then they finally part ways. The pilgrims head west.